This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will discuss the election of 2012, now 8 days away. A big turnout expected in the presidential election as a tight race looms between President Obama and Governor Romney. And some folks are now talking about a potential split decision with one candidate winning the popular vote and another winning the election through the Electoral College. We'll talk about it with Republican Mike Chittum and Democrat Mike Jackson. Also on the show, Martin Flanagan, a highly decorated musician who performs in this area and claims to be the illegitimate son of Hank Williams Sr. Fascinating story about Martin Flanagan that he will tell us about. All this today, but first the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside our area, please call 877-217-5757. And you may reach us via email at inkstershow@wrkf.org. We do want to note the passing of one of the real heavyweights in Louisiana politics, Kevin Riley. Former state lawmaker, chairman of the House Appropriations Committee, and former chief executive officer of the Lamar Advertising Company died yesterday. Kevin Riley was 84 years old, born in Boston, and helped build Lamar into a powerhouse, the largest outdoor advertising company in the United States, if not the world. And, of course, he was an occasional controversial member of the state legislature. I covered him for many years, and I remember that he once said that Louisianians' dream was to have a shotgun and a pickup truck. Kevin Riley, quite a man. Also, LSU, ranked fifth in the nation, had the week off. The Tigers are gearing up for Saturday's game at home against Alabama. The Crimson Tide is number one after defeating Mississippi State 38-7, and Alabama has been installed as a 9-point favorite. And yesterday, or last night, the New Orleans Saints were defeated 34-14 at Denver. The Saints are 2-5. It looks like it's going to be a long year for the Saints. At the same time, the San Francisco Giants won their second World Series title in 3 years, beating the Detroit Tigers 4-3 in 10 innings and winning the series 4-0. And the National League has now won 4 years in a row. Interestingly, 13 of the last 18 elections for president, when the National League team wins the World Series, the Democrat wins the presidential election, and when the American League wins, the Republican wins, 13 of the last 18. So if that's true, President Obama has a 72% chance of victory in 8 days. And with us to talk about this and much more, two Mikes, Mike Chittum, Republican, Mike Jackson, Democrat. Mike Jackson, of course, a former state lawmaker, prominent lawyer in our community. Michael Chittum, a longtime GOP activist and was a delegate to the Republican convention for Governor Mitt Romney. Good morning to both of you gentlemen.
Morning.
Okay. Let's begin with you, Mike Chittum. Are you concerned about that World Series outcome having an effect on the presidential election?
Well, it sounds interesting, that's for sure. I'd certainly rather talk about the LSU football and things like that, but no, not really concerned. You never do know what's going
to
happen.
Well, right now it appears the momentum has moved to some degree to your candidate, Mitt Romney. He's moved upward in the polls since the first debate. How do you explain his rise in voter approval right now?
I think people got to know him through the first and second, third debates. I think it worked fine for him. He seems to be moving ahead. He's presents an image of being somebody that's reasonable, capable of carrying out the mission that he has to accomplish.
Mike Jackson, as far as the distinctions between the two candidates, what do you see are the major distinctions that voters will ultimately decide upon?
I think in the week before the election, people are making a decision based on who they trust. And I think over the course of the election period, you've seen the candidate in Mitt Romney, who has flip-flopped a lot on important issues that are important to Americans. You can go down the list from abortion to health care to the automobile bailout. He shifted positions when it was convenient and when it was of a political necessity to him. And I think at the heart of that is the character of the individual that you want to serve in the Oval Office. Whether or not you want somebody who you really understand and appreciate as a leader versus someone who will do what's necessary in order to facilitate the need at the time.
Mike Chittum, is Governor Romney a flip-flopper?
No, I've heard that before. And obviously the American people, according to the polls, now that's just according to the polls, don't agree with Mr. Jackson on that point. He's moving up in the polls. He seems to be putting forward a campaign, a plan to bring this company, a country, out of the doldrums that it's in for the last 4 years. As we know, we're going to be talking about jobs, more jobs, and that's the big thing that we're going to focus on. So until we can, until we get out of this recession that we have right now, I don't think that calling somebody a flip-flopper or, you can disagree with him, certainly, but I'm not going to be ugly and call, say nasty things about Mr. Obama either. So I really think that what we're going to be looking for right now is more jobs. And I think Mitt Romney has said that he has a plan to put forward those jobs.
Now, last week on the show, we had your good friend John Treen on, and he said he was a Romney man from the start, and he implied that some Republicans were kind of late to the party for Governor Romney. I think, if I remember right, Mike, you might have supported another candidate or two before you got around to Governor Romney.
Certainly did, but Governor Romney proved to be the person that could get in there and win, and he obviously did better than the debates, and the majority of the Republican Party wanted him, and I agreed with them. I think that basically what you have is a party that's united, and we're trying to bring this country back to where it's supposed to be. You know, we have to get more jobs in this country, and that's obviously what Mitt Romney can do. He can lead us out of this recession.
Were you a Santorum guy?
No, I liked actually Newt Gingrich first.
You liked Newt. So why did you like Newt more than Mitt?
Well, I just liked Newt. I thought that he had a philosophy that I agreed with most of the time. And Newt had a way of expressing himself and things like that. He'd been in the speaker. So I did appreciate Newt Gingrich, but I'm now definitely behind Mr. Romney. He's grown on me, as I say.
Now, Mike Jackson, there were the many who thought that the election was all but over before the first debate. And apparently the president might have thought that, too, because he was not ready. And it hurt him immensely. It may have cost him the election. We'll see. But what about the debates changed the dynamics of this campaign?
Well, I think that the debates have certainly given us an opportunity to appreciate Mr. Romney in terms that I spoke of previously, how he's been able to shift positions on certain issues and appeal to people at different levels based on those issues. I would refer to Governor Huntsman in his comments. He referred to Mitt Romney as a well-lubricated weather vane. Those are coming from people associated with his own party.
Fellow Mormon, too.
Absolutely, absolutely. So it's not just Democrats who are calling Mr. Romney a flip-flopper or a person who's inconsistent in terms of his policy, but it's folks within his own party. So the challenge, I think, for Mr. Romney over the next couple of days is to try to convince people that he has a policy position. The evidence, as he has stated, is that he doesn't have any policy positions. And I think that's a dangerous position for the leader of this country to be in.
297-5633. You're frowning, Michael Chittum.
Well, I don't think he's ever stated he has no policy positions. Obviously, Mr. Jackson wants to interpret it that way. That's okay. I think that we can look at what we have here. We have a president that has not been able to bring us out of the doldrums that we've been in for the last 4 years. And I think we have a man that has been involved in the practice business, and he's been able to turn business around. He will bring the United States out of this doldrum that it's in, and we will produce more jobs. I mean, just think of the energy problems that we have right now. Can't even get a contract to put a pipeline through. It's just really sad that you sit there and you notice all the things that we've missed over the last 4 years. And I really would appreciate it if we could just get beyond worrying about whether somebody's flip-flopping on all the issues. You know, we could sit here and talk about Mr. Obama's statements that he's made here lately on Benghazi. And we could say, you know, that might be flip-flopping or even worse.
All right, you've given Mike a lot to work with. Do you want to respond?
Well, first, in regard regards to the economy, I think that we all have recognized the economy has been growing out of a recession since the first year of the Obama administration. And since that time, it's had 13 consecutive quarters of positive growth in terms of unemployment and economic growth. In fact, in September, the economy grew at 2.2%, which was greater than what was indicated. So in terms of the economy, we certainly are headed in the right direction. I think that the biggest impediment to economic growth in this country has been the obstructionist position that has been taken in Congress as it relates to the GOP. And the uncertainty that surrounds what's going to be in place if we have a Congress that's unwilling to work together. The fiscal cliff that we've talked about a lot over the last couple of weeks is something that's on the horizon, and what impact that will have on this country if we go into a cycle of increased taxes and increase spending cuts, and whether or not that will push us into push us back into a recession. So I think that the president has outlined a plan for growth. Jobs are being created. The GDP has increased over the 13 consecutive quarters, and we're headed in the right direction.
Now, Lou in Hammond asks, Mike, if you were disappointed when Governor Jindal was not chosen to be the running mate for Mitt Romney.
I certainly am pleased that he chose Paul Ryan. I think under Governor Jindal would have made a great candidate, but I think Paul Ryan is really up there and knows his stuff and is obviously able to put Wisconsin in play, which we really are greatly appreciative of. I think we have a positive team up there that's working hard, and it's out there, and we're going to now talk about the job situation. Yes, the economy has grown a little bit, but it's still in the doldrums. And if you want this kind of economy, and I hope you certainly don't want this kind of economy, we could sit at 1% or 2%, but you know it's not creating enough jobs. Most of the jobs now are being created in the government sector, and there's a big difference between Mitt Romney and Barack Obama and the beliefs of the Republican Party, the beliefs of the Democratic Party. If you think government is the end-all, be-all, and everything right, for the government.
The question was about the running mate, though. You sound disappointed that Governor Jindal's not on the ticket.
Oh, no, I'm not disappointed. It's perfectly okay, but I'm going to go back to what I said.
You've talked about the jobs, and I think we got the idea that you think Governor Romney will stimulate the economy. 2975633. Now, Sal wants to know, Mike Jackson, about one of your babies, the rail system, and how this might be affected by the coming election.
Well, I'm very optimistic about the rail possibilities, especially between Baton Rouge and New Orleans. If you notice recently, there have been appointments to the compact. That was a law that was created in my last term in the legislature to create a rail compact, to allow for the creation of a rail compact, and New Orleans and Baton Rouge were the bookends of this particular rail compact. It appears now that the structure for the compact has been put in place. There has been appointments in New Orleans and also Baton Rouge, and we're very, very optimistic about the parishes in between also coming along, including Ascension, St. James, and St. Charles. So I'm optimistic that irrespective of who the president is, that we'll have the infrastructure in place on the ground here in the state of Louisiana for the development of rail.
Mike, that's something the governor has been opposed to. Are you a supporter of a rail system between the two biggest cities in our state?
Well, if private industry can put it forward, I'd be glad to support it, but I'm going to wait to see if private industry can put it forward.
Private industry.
Let's stop making the government the be-all, end-all of everything. Again, I'm going to get this point out. The difference between the Republican and Democrat parties are if you want more government and more regulation and the government is in charge of everything, then fine, vote for Barack Obama. But if you want less government, less interference, then you're going to support Mitt Romney.
All right, we'll go to the phone lines after we take a short pause with Michael Chittum, Republican, who is a delegate to the convention in Tampa, with Governor Romney being installed as the Republican nominee for President of the United States, and President Obama seeking a second term, and by all accounts, it looks like it'll be a close race with the election 8 days away. And we'll Go to the phone lines when we return with Michael Jackson and Michael Chittum after this one-minute timeout on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757 outside the area. You may reach us at inkstershow@wrkf.org. Paul in Opelousas. Paul, you're on with Michael Chittum and Michael Jackson.
How you doing, Jim? Great subject again, as always. Great show. Got a question for both of your guests. Name me one policy change or plan that either Barack or Mr. Romney has that will grow jobs. And name me, and please describe to me how you, Mr. Romney, describe this, of not raising taxes, but also balancing the budget. What?
All right. What about those ideas that have been forwarded by the candidates? Mike, you, which Mike do we start with?
Go ahead.
I think we go in alphabetical order, so we go with Mike Chittum.
Well, I think I can name one, certainly, which would be the getting the Energy Department going again, in which we can have more jobs created that way. It, just the pipeline itself will bring in a lot more jobs from Canada. You know, we'll end all that gas and oil go to Canada, go to China right now, planning to go to China. And I think that would be an easy way to do it. That's just one section. You know, getting rid of some of the regulations that we have now and letting the small businesses come back together, maybe getting rid of Obamacare and bringing that boogaboo down, as they say. Those are just some of the suggestions that Mr. Romney's put forward.
Mike?
Well, I believe that the Obama administration plan is an global plan to create an environment whereby business can be productive and grow. He talks about in putting forth a second term plan, talks about energy and manufacturing. He talks about education and reinvesting in education. Those are growth areas, growth industries, obviously, and I think that the president's plan is to allow for manufacturing to be conducted in the United States, to allow people in the United States to have livable, high-paying jobs.
297-5633, Dan downtown. Dan, you're on with Michael Jackson and Michael Chittum. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Do you think it's good for this country that $50,000 a plate soirees are a source of funding?
All right. Mike, what do you think? I know you've been to a few of those, Mike Chittum.
I'd like to know when. You obviously think I have a lot more money than I do. I haven't checked my bank account lately. You know, $50,000 soirees, that's how you raise money. I know that. I'm all in favor of the candidates raising money. I don't know what the gentleman was talking about.
It's going on, and in fact, both parties are doing it.
So I really think that, you know, it depends. I do not think that it's good if you can buy your way into seeing somebody, but I also think that they have to raise money. So, you know, it just depends on the person that's in charge and whether or not that money is being used properly.
What is that money for, Michael Jackson? Is it used for influence, access? What's the reason why somebody would give that much money to a candidate?
Well, I think
ego?
All the above. I mean, some of it is ego. There are a lot of people who enjoy participating in the process at high levels. I think that certainly in a society where everything is equal, it would be a great thing to not have such a great deal of influence in regard to money, but that is the system in which we're working with. The beauty of it is that average Americans can also participate. And I think that you've seen with this election and previous elections that average Americans are starting to participate at greater levels, especially because of the opportunities that exist online.
297-5633 is your number, and a listener, Andy, wants to get particularly Mike Chittum's take, but we'll get both Mike's assessment of the influence of one Donald Trump on this election. And, of course, Mr. Trump was at it again a few days ago. J.C. Kane producing today. J.C., do we have that cut with Donald Trump and the president's response? Let's give it a listen if we do.
If Barack Obama opens up and gives his college records and applications, and if he gives his passport, applications, and records. I will give to a charity of his choice, Inner City Children in Chicago, American Cancer Society, AIDS Research, anything he wants, a check immediately for $5 million.
What's this thing with Trump and you? I don't care. It's like me and Letterman. What has he got against you here? I don't care.
You know, this all dates back to when we were growing up together in Kenya.
Yeah. I gotta give you that one.
We had, you know, constant run-ins on the soccer field.
And, yeah.
He wasn't very good and resented it.
Yeah.
Have you? When we finally moved to America, I thought it'd be over.
Yeah. But no.
Mike, Jim.
Yep.
What do you think?
So he wants to give him $5 million. Take him up on it. I'd like to see that money be given to charity. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump's Donald Trump. You just go with the flow. Don't worry about it.
All right, Mike Jackson.
I think disappointment, you know, in the Donald for the most part. I mean, this has become somewhat of a sideshow. I don't think anybody really takes it very seriously. I think most Americans are really interested in who's going to be able to lead this country as we move forward. And unfortunately, Mr. Trump is still, you know, putting himself in a position to deal with issues that are just not relevant.
Nicholas in Lafayette. Hi, Nicholas.
Hi,
yes, sir.
How you doing?
Fine.
Hey, I was calling. I wanted to kind of bring a conversation back around to what the guests were speaking about before, with the injection of government funding to public transportation, and also you know how that affects the public. Whereas one of the guests was saying he'd like to see private enterprise do it. And you know the problem.
All right. Well, what is your question, Nicholas?
Mainly, where's the you know, how is it that you can get private enterprise to get away from the idea of not starting a business with their own money?
All right, Mike, you want to take that?
Well, I'm no lawyer like my friend over here, Mr. Jackson, but I would think that you have to cut down on the amount of government that. Interference in the business practices. I think that this is basically a fundamental difference. If you want government to do it, that's fine. I understand that, but I don't want government to do it. I think that we have to rely on the private industry a lot more than we're relying on it today.
Well, would you like to see private industry get involved in all transportation, roads, highways?
In some cases, I'd like to see a little bit more. You know, CATS is just a fantastic example of government at its best.
What about the federal interstate highway system?
That is a another system that, you know,
it was started by a good Republican,
Dwight
Eisenhower.
Yeah, I understand that.
So Mike says that should go to private business.
I think a lot more should go to private business than they have now.
All right, Michael Jackson.
Well, there's no objection to, you know, whether the private sector can play a role, that they ought to play a role. But the fact of the matter is that government is involved in transportation at high levels. Jim, you mentioned our highway system. We provide transportation right now from Baton Rouge to New Orleans by way of L.A. Swift. And we're already, government is already in the game. So if there's an opportunity to reevaluate government spending in a way that it might be more conducive and productive for Louisiana citizens, I think we should offer the opportunity to reevaluate and readdress budgetary concerns in that manner.
8 days to go in the election between President Obama and Governor Romney. And, of course, there are many local issues and candidates on the ballot as well. And we can see big turnouts for early voting. And we encourage everybody to get out and vote. The national popular vote, according to polls that are available at Real Clear Politics, show that Mitt Romney right now holds about a one-point lead in a compilation of surveys over President Obama. But when it is assessed state by state, it appears that President Obama has a slight advantage. Mike, I'm sure that's something that would be interesting to you and to the rest of our country if one candidate would win in the popular vote and the other would win the election through the Electoral College? Hasn't that happened recently?
Certainly has. And if Mr. Obama wins by the Electoral College, then he is the President of the United States, period, end of paragraph.
All right. Mike Jackson?
No, having to agree with him. It has happened recently, and hopefully we won't have that to deal with. Hopefully we can have a consensus of both the Electoral College and the popular vote, and so we don't have to go through that whole diatribe of trying to debate whether or not we should get rid of the Electoral College in favor of a popular vote.
All right, 2975633. We still have time to get in with Michael Jackson and Michael Chittum. Here's a question online from Nicholas on Nicholson, another Nicholas. He says, I believe that everyone who works an honest eight-hour day is entitled to have a decent roof and be able to support his family. Neither of the two candidates addresses that issue. Mike Jackson?
Well, I think that, you know, America is about hard work and free enterprise and all those, you know, things that we hear about during this election time. And I think that you know, nobody's downplaying the advantages of hard work. I don't think either candidate suggests that folks ought not earn their keep or earn their way in America. I hope that answers his question. But Mike, you can maybe have a shot at it.
No, I thoroughly agree with you. I think that you know, you have to look at what the gentleman does and things like that. And if his work product is up there, then fine. Everything is not fair in this world, and sometimes it doesn't happen the right way. But I think that the free enterprise system that we have right now is probably one of the best. I don't think either candidate is suggesting that we do away with that.
2975633. We all have our needs and wants in life, and sometimes we work hard and we get them, and occasionally we don't. For example, you wanted donuts before the show. I wasn't able to accommodate you, Mike Chittum.
Yeah, you certainly weren't. He is bad about that. I won't say he's cheap, but, you know, it would be nice if we had had some donuts. Right. But, yeah, life isn't fair. Again, I'm sorry. Life is not fair. And occasionally you don't get what you want. I'd like a new car. Not going to happen right now because I just don't have the money for it. But, you know, you continue to try. You continue to strive. And if you want government to hand it to you, you know, then you need to vote for the Democrats. If you don't, you know, maybe you need to vote for the Republicans.
All right. Jeff on I-10. Good morning, Jeff. You're on the air with the two mics, Chittum and Jackson. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning, Mr. Chittum. Good morning, Mr. Jackson. Let me first say I love your show. Second, my concern actually involves a very interesting topic that a lot of people don't want to talk about, but it's about the drug war and specifically the legalization of marijuana. And my question really is about the difference between the two candidates, if there exists one, and what kind of path you think they'll choose as far as the drug war and the legalization of marijuana.
I do not know what Mr. Obama's position is on the legalization of marijuana. I can only assume that Mr. Romney's position is that he does not want to legalize it. Basically, I think that most of us think it's a gateway drug, and we're not here to support it.
A gateway to what?
Gateway to harder drugs, you know, heroin and stuff like that.
Mike Jackson.
Well, I don't know if either of the candidates have stated a positive position on this particular issue. Of course, there's been a great deal of conversation in the news of late. I think there's been a couple of state propositions that are dealing with the medicinal marijuana and whether or not to legalize it and gather tax revenue from it as a result of it. I think one of the things I'm not going to say or promote one side or the other, but to discuss the fact that we've got a great deal of problems associated with illegal drug use and consumption in this country. And the reality is that it helps to inhibit crime in a lot of ways in every community, not just poor communities, but across our state and across our nation. I think that we have to at least engage the discussion on ways to reduce the criminal element associated with illegal drugs in America. And when we have the courage to to do it, I think we'll deal with some of the problems that we have in our communities.
All right, 877-217-5757. That number works wherever you are. In our remaining time with the two mics, Mike Jackson, Democrat, Mike Chittum, Republican. Kelly asks about the 6th District Congressional race, something that Representative Jackson is familiar with. He ran 4 years ago. She wants to know, for whom will both of you vote in this election that has Congressman Cassidy against two lesser-known candidates, Rufus Craig and Richard Toragano? Who's your choice in this one, Mike Jackson?
Rufus Craig was my choice. Clearly, there's been a great deal of disappointment in regard to the way Congressman Cassidy has approached his tenure in Congress. And I think that this particular candidate probably offers the best alternative to the Cassidy administration, the Cassidy congressional.
You like Rufus?
I like Rufus.
All right. Mike Chittum is is that a sneer?
No, I think everybody knows I'm supporting Mr. Cassidy. I think Mr. Cassidy's done a fantastic job. He stated what the majority of the people in the 6th District believe in. Obviously, he has, because nobody's running against him.
Well, two people and
Mr.
are.
Well, come on now. Mr. Jackson would have made a formidable candidate maybe, but those two people, they don't have a chance. And we all know that. And that shows you that Mr. Cassidy's doing a all very right. good job.
All right, another question from Leo. He wants to know about your mayoral choices. Who are you voting for in that race? Mike Chittum, do you have a choice in the mayor's race?
Yeah, I like Steve Myers right now.
Steve Myers. Now, there's a maverick candidate who doesn't have a lot of money. It seems like you're a little inconsistent on that remark you just made
no,
about
Steve
this
Myers
guy doesn't have a chance.
Steve Myers is a close personal friend. I think he's a personal friend of yours, if I'm not mistaken, Jim. Who are you going to vote for?
Well, I asked the question.
Don't give the answers either, do you?
Mike Jackson, what do you think?
I think Kip Holden has earned a third term. I think that he gives us some stability in the mayor seat, and I think that the election actually is not going to be very close.
So why hasn't Mike Walker gained any traction that we know of?
I think Mike Walker is gaining traction all the time. Again, I'm a personal friend of Steve Myers, so I'm not going to speak too much on the subject.
Well, I'm impressed that you would vote for an independent over a Republican.
I'm voting for Mr. Myers because he is, again, a close
personal,
personal friend,
and sometimes friendship trumps everything else. And Mike Chittum, you're obviously a loyal friend, and there's something to be said for that. That's good. Would you ever vote for a Democrat, though?
No.
Now, Mike Jackson, you switched briefly to an independent.
Yes.
Is that something you regret?
No, I don't regret it. I think in that particular race, people needed an opportunity they need an opportunity to cast their vote in that race without fear of intervention. As has been well documented, I never felt like there was an opportunity to be vetted properly. And it was a decision that I personally mm-hmm. made, one which I stand by.
Mm-hmm. Ann asks, is it true that Chris Christie has endorsed Steve Myers for mayor? Is that true, Mike?
No. We all know that's
how.
Not
how did
the case.
That rumor start?
I don't know. Maybe you know more about it than I do.
I started that one. No, I don't know. But Myers has been on this ideal protein diet, so he and Chris Christie aren't dining at the same training table. But how do you see the election 8 days away? Mike Jackson, what about the presidential election?
Well, I think it's going to boil down to the 9 toss-up states. The president has never been behind in the Electoral College. There's been a lot of talk about polls. But in terms of the Electoral College, the president has never trailed. If the president wins Ohio, certainly he has a path to the presidency. That's very clear. Mr. Romney would have to win all 8 of the toss-up states in order to win.
All right, we'll hold that thought for a moment and return for a few minutes with Mike and Mike, 297-5633. Also, we will hear from Martin Flanagan, a celebrated musician who claims to be the son of Hank Williams Sr. We'll be back in a minute. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 8 days and counting from the 2012 presidential election. On the ballot here in our community, we have an election for mayor, public service commission, for Supreme Court, lots of constitutional amendments. A few items to discuss more with the two Mikes, Mike Chittum, Republican, Mike Jackson, Democrat. A listener wants to know about Amendment number 2, which could give Louisiana the strongest gun rights in America. Mike Jackson, your thoughts on this one?
Well, I think we have some pretty strong gun rights in America, and I'm not opposed to the Second Amendment at all. I think that what we have in place is adequate.
All right. Mike Jackson has given his opinion. What's yours, Mike Chittum?
I'm voting for Amendment number 2. I think it will, you know, make it a little bit stronger. I'm all for strong gun rights.
All right. Donald and Watson. Donald, you're on the air with Mike and Mike.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yes. I got actually 2 short questions. One of them is, why can we not get none of the above on every ballot for every race? And the second question is, if 2 candidates running against each other, why are we not able to give each one of them the exact same amount of money and vote on their record instead of the guy with the most money usually wins?
All right. Mike Chittum, what do you think?
The first question, I'm sorry, I missed the first one.
Well, I think the first one was about, the true question was number 2, about the money, and would you be in favor of public financing each candidate?
I'm not in favor of public financing. I think that the private sector is the best way to go again. We just don't have this money that everybody thinks we have to keep throwing it at all our problems. You know, you could give each candidate $1,000 and see what that would do for them. But I think, or give them the limit of what they need to spend. But I don't think that's the way to go. I think that we need to let the people decide and let them give their money if they want to. That's people's right to be able to support a candidate.
All right. And several years ago, a candidate in Louisiana did try to change his name to none of the above and get on the ballot and was not allowed to be on the ballot as none of the above. Mike Jackson, what about money in politics? Should there be a limit, and should there be public financing that would mitigate the wild spending, over $2 billion being spent on the presidential election?
Well, I think that in this area there might be a need for some balance in terms of public financing versus the participation of the general public in the free. I'm not opposed. I think that we ought to encourage people to participate as much as possible. But there might be an opportunity to limit how much an individual can give. In Louisiana, we have a limit in terms of $2,500 per individual or corporation. At the federal level, we might want to try to look at some limitations on giving. Does it solve the problem? I don't think so. I think you still have, the opportunity for folks to contribute and give it, and it doesn't really change. I don't think it changes the outcome. And there has been some instances where candidates who have had less money have actually won. So let's try to give the system an opportunity to work.
And as we hit the break, Michael Jackson was saying that he thinks President Obama will win the election regardless of what happens with the popular vote, that he's ahead in too many states that are the so-called battleground states. Michael Chittum, how do you see it?
Well, first of all, I think Florida is going to go with Romney, then Virginia, North Carolina, and I think then we'll probably get Wisconsin and, if I'm not mistaken, probably not New Hampshire, which in Colorado, which would give us, I think, if my math is correct, enough to win the Electoral College
without Ohio.
I think that's the one of the ways to go, but I think we're still going to win Ohio. I'm firmly in the belief that the momentum's with us and people have recognized that this administration is a failure, and therefore they're going to be voting for Mr. Romney.
All right. Well, we'll hopefully have you both back after the election. Michael Jackson, you're chomping at the bit for the last word. So
no.
Mike Chittum got the first word, I believe.
So. Ohio is the key. If Romney does not win Ohio, he has absolutely no chance in winning the presidency, and I think that will tell us a lot. Hopefully, Ohio won't be a state that we have to find out the day after the election what the outcome is.
Well, one listener says this race should be put into perspective by none other than the late Mae West, who said, when choosing between two evils, I always like to take the one I've never tried before. So if that's the case, then I would think if Mae was right, she died in 1980, by the way, then it might be good for the challenger. But let's see. We'll find out. It's coming soon to a theater near you. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Mike. Take care.
Thank you, Jim.
And we're joined now by Martin Flanagan, a musician of note who spends much time in Baton Rouge from Montgomery, Alabama, the hometown of Hank Williams Sr. And Martin believes that he is the son of the late Hank Williams, who died on the 1st of January, 1953, at 29 years old. Let's give a listen to some of Martin Flanagan's music before we talk to the man, JC.
One, two, one, two, three, four. Sees everything I do, and it's killing me. Trying to decide.
Good morning, Martin Flanagan.
Good morning, Jim.
We got him now. Good to hear from Martin Flanagan in his latest CD, Beneath These Strings. That one's Devil on My Shoulder. Who's the devil on your shoulder?
That'd be my conscience.
Well, you do resemble Hank Williams a bit. Well, I'm sure you've been told that. Yeah.
I have indeed.
Now, he died at 29, and if you're his son, that would mean you had to be born sometime around.
I was born in 1951, a year and a half before Hank died.
What's your birthday?
June the 7th of 51.
6751. So about more than a year and a half. And how did this happen, if it did?
Well, Jim, through just a lot of odd coincidences, one of the first things that happened, and there's a lot of things that make me connect these dots, but one of which was I had a heart problem some years ago, and the doctors are always asking, do you have a history of heart disease in your family? And it's like, well, I don't know. I'm an adopted child, so I don't know. And I got to thinking, well, maybe I need to try to find out. And I knew nothing about my biological parents. And I remember after my mother's death, my sister telling me she had come across my adoption papers. And so I went in search of those, thinking I would find my biological parents in those papers. But quite the contrary, what I found was, for the adoption, I was adopted when I was a year old in 1952. And in the adoption papers, when it referred to my biological parents, it said that my birth mother was the only parent worthy of notification. And I thought, well, that's an odd way to state that. Why would they say that my birth father was unworthy? But if you stop and you look back at the time in 1952, even though Hank was a rising star, he was considered unworthy. He would either not show up for a show or he'd show up drunk. You couldn't depend on Hank, and as a result, the Grand Ole Opry dropped him. The Louisiana Hayride kicked him off. Even his best friend and his producer, Roy Acuff, dropped Hank, said he's got a $1 million voice and a 10-cent brain. But, you know, at the time, I'm still not putting that together. Well, then I keep digging through my adoption papers, and I see that in 1953, there's a subsequent readoption. And I don't know why they had to do a readoption. It was the same adoptive parents. Only thing that changed this time was when it spoke about my biological parents, it now said that my birth mother was the only living parent. And I thought, well, that's odd. Obviously, my birth father has deceased. But I'm still not connecting the dots. And then just strange things started happening, just like you say, well, I can see the resemblance. And I started playing music, which is a whole nother accidental story in itself. But, I'd get people going, man, you remind me of Hank or this and that. But a friend of mine one day, a few years ago, sends me a text message, and there's a photograph attached to it. And I think it's the first photograph I've ever gotten on my phone. took me a while to figure out how to open it. I opened it, and I couldn't make out what it was. And so when Ray gets back to town a few days later, he calls me. He's like, Martin, did you get my text message? And I said, yeah. He said, what'd you think about the photograph? I said, I couldn't figure out what it was. He said, well, it's Hank's grave. I said, really? So why are you sending me a picture of Hank's grave? He said, man, I don't know. He said, I was going through Montgomery, Alabama. I had just this urge to visit Hank's grave, and I'm standing there. It's like, I've got to send this picture to Martin Flanagan. He said, I don't know why. I'm going, well, that's odd. I never really thought of it. I didn't even know Hank was from Montgomery. That's where I was born. So,
Well, it's quite a story. I mean, now, your mother never talked about this?
No. I don't know what they knew. I mean, they never didn't tell me that I wasn't adopted. I mean, they were very forthright about that from the beginning.
But did they know who the birth parents were?
I don't think so. And if you look even deeper, like Jet Williams, who was an adult before she found out that she was also a child of Hank. And, of course, none of her adoptive parents, they knew a little more than mine did, but there was such a conspiracy to keep these illegitimate children of Hank quiet. And classic examples, when I hit a dead end with going through my adoption papers and it didn't have the names, I said, okay, well, I'll go to the Alabama Board of Vital Statistics or whoever handled the adoptions and all, and found out that Alabama in the late 80s changed their laws and it allowed adoptive children to get their sealed records. So I wrote them, sent them my $15, gave them my name and address, and they sent me back my seal file, which was open and empty. And I thought, now why the hell would my file have nothing in it? And didn't really think anything of it other than sometime later, I accidentally run across this story about Jet Williams. And she went through the same thing. And when she got her file from Alabama, her seal file was open and empty, and she found that odd. So she hired a private investigator to dig into it, and he was able to unearth. Well, first thing he unearthed was there was a big conspiracy in Nashville that Hank had illegitimate children, and they all kept it quiet. They didn't want anyone to be heirs to the estate.
Okay. Well, Jet Williams was born January 6, 1953, 5 days after Hank Williams died. And our guest, Martin Flanagan, was born 7th day of June, 1951, in Montgomery, Alabama, where Hank was known to spend some quality time. Now, have you ever talked about this with Hank Williams, Jr.?
No, I haven't. I don't think he'd be very receptive. I know he wasn't receptive of Jet when she came forward. It took Jet 9 years of legal battles to finally, you know, be recognized as one of Hank's heirs. But I mean, she spent years in the Alabama Supreme Court, the appellate court. She's went to the Supreme Court 5 times. So I had no idea how much money and how much time she spent trying to prove this. And it's like, you know, I just want to do my singing and songwriting. Right. I don't want to get caught in some legal battle.
Well, you claim you've had some heart conditions, issues that may be hereditary. Hank Williams Sr., of course, died of heart failure before he was 30. What about the alcoholism?
I like my drinks. There's no denying that. I'll tell you something else interesting. In 1952, Hank was drafted for World War II, but they didn't take him. They reclassified him 4F because he had a congenital back disorder. 1972, I got drafted for Vietnam. At the very last minute, they reclassified me 4S because of a congenital back defect. So it's like, you know, and if you know anything about Hank, people think he's this big guy because he's legendary, but he's a skinny little thing just like me. You know?
His son, how big is Hank Williams Jr.?
He's big. Yeah. He's a pretty big guy. But see, Bocephus was born in 49. I was born 2 years later, 51. Jet was born in 53. So looked like Hank was cranking them out at least every 2 years that we know of.
And we know Bocephus has inherited the alcoholism.
Yes, that's right.
And probably taken it to a new level.
That is correct.
And also had trouble showing up for shows. And when he did show up occasionally, they were very brief, as it once happened right here in Baton Rouge. But this is sounding somewhat familiar to Tim McGraw's account of how he found out Tug McGraw was his dad, the pitcher, great reliever for the Mets and the Phillies. He didn't find out until he was an adult, a young adult. When this revelation, if it's true, when it occurred, what was your reaction to it?
Well, you know, at first, you know, all the dots kind of started connecting. I thought, well, that's interesting, and I can understand maybe that's why there was nobody musical in my family, but I've always had this desire to play and write music and all, so that it kind of explained that. And, you know, I think I like same hobbies as my dad pretty much, so... Mm-hmm. But, you know, if anything, I said, you know, there's probably a good story in here. And I've been in advertising and marketing for 40 years. And if I know one thing, that if you have a USP, a unique selling point, that's key to promoting any product. And I'll give you a good example. There was an artist in New York City, and he had his paintings hanging in a gallery. And after 2 months, none of them selling, just in a fit of rage one day, he goes in with black spray paint. He paints a big X across all of the paintings. And police come, arrest him, take him out in handcuffs. Next day, the story runs. Artist defames his own work, this and that. The very next day, every one of his paintings sold, with the exception of one, which was a small painting. It was a portrait of his daughter, and he couldn't bring himself to put an X on it. But now there was a unique story about this artist's work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I thought, you know, I have an interesting story, and certainly can't help, but it's not something I want to dwell on either. I want to be recognized for my own individual talents.
Well, for those who'd like to hear Beneath These Strings, how do you go about getting a copy of your work?
Well, you could get them on CD Baby, Amazon, iTunes, just any of your typical music outlets. Or you could go to martinflanagan.com. My albums are still there, too.
And you spend a lot of time in this area, don't you?
I do, indeed. In fact, this is pretty much it. I play a little bit in Texas, which has been kind of fun. I meant to, when I brought you my CD.
Well, we're short on time, but...
Yeah, I'll leave this with you. I meant to leave you my one sheet with my music the other day. But
well, there we go. Look at that. I mean, this is spitting image of Hank Williams, Martin Flanagan. Martin, let's get you back. You've got quite a story. And,
well, I'd love to come back, Jim.
We'll do it again. And that's it for today. And thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.